This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Just as winter's temperatures are getting really serious, we've noticed that a few of the issues we've been following for some time are deepening. With us to go over some of the week's big stories are Kat Stafford, a reporter for the Detroit Free Press, an Ida B. Wells Fellow, and a native of the city of Detroit. Kat, welcome back to Stateside.
Thanks for having me.
And Candace Fortin is with us, too, Chief of Engagement and Operations for Outlier Media. Hello, Candace.
Hi, it's good to be with you.
Let's start out with a measure that Detroit City Council is working on, drafting a letter to ask Governor Gretchen Whitmer to declare a public health emergency around water shutoffs. Now, that's not the only ask that council is making. They're also trying to see if they can just get the Water Bureau to stop. So I just wanted to ask you two, which is more meaningful, that letter asking the governor to make a big, bold letter declaration about this, or the separate resolution asking Detroit Water and Sewer to just stop doing shutoffs for the foreseeable future? Candace, you got thoughts?
Yeah, well, if you think about community impact, certainly that second one is going to be more important for Detroiters. So if you have an immediate stop to shutoffs, that's going to really mean something for folks who are facing that crisis every day in their household. So I would say if we're thinking about community impact, really thinking about stopping shutoffs is an important thing to talk about.
Kat, I was wondering, which do you think is likely to instigate change?
I agree with Candace. You know, for several years, we have really seen a momentum among Detroiters, water advocates to really push the city to implement some sort of moratorium on these shutoffs. So to see an actual resolution or effort coming forward through city council, I think would have more of an immediate impact. I mean, this dates back to the height of the water shutoff crisis when you had international calls for the city to stop these water shutoffs. So I'm seeing across, especially social media, a lot of advocates on the ground, grassroots activists who are really applauding, particularly Sheffield, for taking a step forward. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out because the city so far has kind of pushed back on this notion of halting the shutoffs.
I was looking at the numbers. In 2014, 33,000 households lost water. I think the more recent numbers would suggest the city's got it down to several thousand. Does that sound about right to you, too?
So I think last year the city shut off about 23,000 residential accounts. So that's down 10,000 from 2014, which, I mean, over time is not really a substantial decrease in the number of shutoffs.
One concern that has consistently been raised by a lot of people who work or interface with these families dealing with this issue is how many people have had their water shut off over time and never got that service turned back on. And when you go to the water department to seek this data, this information, to be blunt, it's very hard to get a hard number, to get hard data to support one way or the other that, yes, people are getting their services turned back on, or no, you have some people that haven't had water for years. I have one source of mine who he works directly in this community, and he is providing water to residents across the city who have not had water for several years. So it's a serious problem, and I would love to see more data, more information coming from the city's water department to address this concern about some people who may be potentially living without water for quite some time.
You know, it's just thinking about what it would mean to find alternative means for washing your clothes and cooking and even just flushing the toilet. I mean, the city's public health officer told the Detroit News that the city's found no association between a shutoff and, you know, communicable diseases. But I've got to wonder what that does to people's mental health.
Absolutely. I remember a great reporting last year from Martina Guzman in The Guardian, where she followed a mother who was pregnant, who had lost water and was having to carry, you know, cases of water to her home to wash her children, to prepare food, and the toll that that took on her body and her health during that pregnancy. I mean, you know, we might not be able to find the statistics to back up a correlation, but certainly in narrative, we know that there's a correlation and real serious health risk for especially vulnerable communities like children and senior citizens.
So the advocates have been asking for this moratorium for years now. Do you think council's voice is really going to break through and make much of a difference?
That's a great question.
That was a long silence there.
We'll see. You know, I mean, this is such a delicate issue, an issue that Detroiters are very passionate about. And I'm sure people are hopeful. They are hopeful that this time this will actually, you know, put fire under officials to help people deal with this. But at the same time, there's been a breakdown in trust. You know, this has been going on for so long that people are saying, okay, this is just another item being proposed, but will there actually be systemic change here? So I think that there needs to be some rebuilding of trust. But I think some folks are cautiously optimistic.
If you're just joining us, my guests for the weekly news roundtable are Kat Stafford of the Detroit Free Press and Candace Fortman from Outlier Media. Kat Stafford, I believe you have some news for us.
Yes, I have accepted a new role with the Associated Press, where I will be covering race and ethnicity. And for the remainder of this year, I'll heavily be focused on the 2020 election. Very excited.
Congratulations. That's awesome. But here was my question. Are you staying in Detroit?
Yes. And for me, that's the best part of this role, because there's so much happening in the city, the good, the bad, the in-between. And I'm excited that I get to take the expertise that I've been able to build at the Detroit Free Press and take it to this level. And I've told people time and time again, I feel that Detroit is literally a microcosm of a lot of the issues that are facing communities across the country. Poverty, even water shutoffs, mm-hmm. foreclosures, mm-hmm. you name it. Everything that's happening here is literally happening elsewhere. So I'm excited to hit the ground running in this new role.
Yeah, I was hearing some reporting out of Iowa around the time of the caucus about caucus voters feeling deeply, deeply conflicted about what would voters in the swing states want me to do? Who would they want me to go for? And I just wondered how many of them were aware of low turnout among African-American voters in Michigan. Can you just reset the history of what happened in 2016?
So in 2016, I was actually one of the reporters at the Free Press who was kind of on the ground in the community just trying to get a pulse of what was happening. And I just recall just looking at when President Obama ran and comparing that to when Hillary Clinton ran, it was a very noticeable difference. I was at a church in Flint when she came to speak, and just hearing the residents say, okay, I don't feel sold. I don't feel a true connection. That's when I personally started to see that shift, that election shift toward Trump. And I think when you look toward 2020, I think people once again are feeling a little scattered. They want to feel connected to a candidate. And a lot of the voters that I've spoken with, they're struggling to find that connection. And I think moving forward, if the Democrats want to win this key base of voters, they're going to have to speak to those issues that impact Black communities. It's more than criminal justice. People want to hear about health. They want to hear about jobs. They want to hear much more than they feel what's being given to them. So I think moving forward, Detroit is going to be huge for the state of Michigan. And once again, that's why I'm so excited to be here to really tell those rich stories.
You know, white journalists often talk about the Black vote as if it were monolithic in favor of one candidate. Is that your observation?
You know, I hear that a lot. And I think the media overall has to do a much better job. And that's correct. You know, all Black voters are not behind one specific candidate. Even when you look at generations, there's a generational divide. There are so many differences within the Black community. Some Black voters are more conservative. Some are far more progressive. They're not throwing their support behind one specific person. And I think that media coverage really needs to get into that nuance, even beyond Black voters, whether it's Latino voters, whether it's, you know, whomever the demographic is, you really need to dive deeper into understanding the issues that are important to these communities.
You know, Politico published a story this week suggesting that major Black donors to the Democratic Party feel that the candidates are not doing very much to check in right now. Candace, have I seen this movie somewhere?
Ha, ha, ha. I think that we have seen it many times. And it's a really unfortunate thing that is happening in the Democratic Party. There is sort of this idea that Black voters will just support Democratic candidates. And so we don't need to do the outreach. We don't need to do the real on the ground work. And I really do think it is deeply impacting voter turnout. When you looked at the Obama machine, the thing about that machine was that it was constantly churning inside of communities. So whether it was Obama himself on the ground or that incredible reach that he had where he could get almost anybody to go out and campaign for him in cities like Detroit and Baltimore and Oakland, in D.C., these very Black cities. What we we do not see candidates doing that at that same rate. And it likely is making that voter base feel like they are not a part of the conversation. And if you aren't a part of the conversation, why would you show up to the table to vote?
If you're just joining us, my guests are Candace Fortman of Outlier Media and Kat Stafford of the Detroit Free Press. There's one more story I wanted to ask you both about. There's a teenage boy named Caleb McIntosh who's been missing from his home in Detroit since January 30th. And Caleb left Cass Tech High School in the middle of the day, and he never returned home. Candace, I understand you've been in contact with the family trying to help his mother get the word out. What do we know at this point?
Sadly, we don't know anything more than that, and that is the truly frightening part. He reached out to his mother later that night on January 30th after he left school, said he was fine, and no one has seen or heard from him since. There have been lots of people hitting the streets, the neighborhoods near Cass Tech, neighborhoods near where his friends live. The students at Cass Tech have been questioned. Teachers, counselors have all been talked to, and no one seems to know anything. You know, we're at February 14th. He's been missing since January 30th. And so the intensity and need to really make sure that we are turning over every rock to help find this young man increases every day that he does not come home or does not return his return phone calls to his family.
Caleb's mother said on social media that he'd been struggling in recent months emotionally and behaviorally. Kat, do you feel like the city or the state or the public school system have any kind of meaningful structure in place to tackle the unique mental health challenges and societal struggles that Black teenagers and brown teenagers are going through every day?
That's a great question. You know, a couple years ago, the Free Press did a pretty huge project that looked at a lot of the issues that face children growing up in the city. And one of the stories that I did, I talked directly to children and teenagers that just so happened to be some Cass Tech kids. And they felt that a lot of the issues that they face kind of just get swept under the rug, or they're not at the forefront. When we talk about crime in the city, it's just that single instance, but you never talk to the children who might be impacted or who might see some things that aren't typical in other parts of the country. So I think a lot of people would like to see much, much more resources devoted to the mental health of our children, devoted to helping them sort through a lot of the things that you see when you grow up in a city that faces a lot of troubles and struggles, such as the city of Detroit. So I think you also have, on the same hand, a lot of teachers who, you know, they're not trained therapists or physicians, but they are put into these classrooms with these children who have some issues, and they try their hardest with the resources that they have to help these children. But once again, we need more resources for our kids.
There's been a lot of talk in recent years about failures in the media to report on missing Black children as often and as completely as white children, and police failure to respond as quickly. Do either of you sense a change in the dynamic, or do you feel like we're still light years away from where we need to be?
Yeah, no, I think that we're still really far from where we need to be when we think about the intensity of when a child is missing and that child is a person of color, specifically a Black or brown child, compared to, I think about this all the time, if Caleb had been a 16-year-old white girl from Bloomfield, the intensity of coverage, I know, I don't have to question it, I know it would have been different. And I don't know how, at this point, we can illustrate any further the value of Black and brown bodies, right, to the media, to police departments. And what happens then is that the community takes on the burden of getting the word out and doing the work that media organizations, that the police department should have been doing. I can't believe that DPD just put a media alert out this week. He's been missing since January 30th. There is just no, in my brain, no logical explanation for why it has taken so long for there to be attention given to this story in mass. This is one of our own children. This is a child of our city. And if we aren't protecting our own children, then shame on us. This is a story that should be told. And it doesn't matter what the body looks like. This is a child that's missing. And I can't wrap my brain around the lack of attention given to this story.
And for me, what this also really speaks to is that lack of diversity, that lack of inclusion, the lack of having enough Black journalists and other people of color in the newsrooms who not only report the news, but who make the decisions about what's actually being covered. And so when your newsroom does not have enough of those voices who are tapped in, like Candace is, to the community, you suffer. Your coverage suffers, and who suffers because of that? The community. And what does that do? It sows more distrust, not distrust in, you know, the law enforcement, but the media as well. And so that's a huge issue, and I think that's part of the problem that you see here.
Yeah.
Kat Stafford with the Detroit Free Press. She is a short timer on her beat. She's moving over to the Associated Press for what I'm sure will be a wild election year. And Candace Fortman has been with us, too, from Outlier Media. I just wanted to thank you both today. I guess we're going to call this the Galentine's Day edition of the Weekly Roundup.
What a great way to celebrate. Yes.
We appreciate your time.
Thanks. Thank you.